children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to MASC's weekly radio show on Family Matters. MASC, Mothers and Fathers Aligned, saving kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health struggles, including addiction. If you know someone that needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, please give us a call at 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. You may want to jot it down for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you sit next to in shul. Our number again, 718-758-0400. Remember, all calls are strictly confidential. We also offer free naloxone. Trainings can be by Zoom or in person. Naloxone is prevention of opioid overdose. Everyone should have naloxone in their shul, in their school, on their blocks. For somebody, you can save a life, you save one life, you save a world. So call for a training and a free kit. We can do it by Zoom or and in person, 718-758-0400. Tonight, I know I say this a lot, but I really, really mean it. Tonight, I am so happy to have on a dear friend, a colleague. I'll say a dear friend once again, somebody that I've been trying to get on for the longest time. And that is Deborah Shabtai, who is the Vice President of Clinical Programming at Onward Living in Florida. She also, Deborah, specializes in treatment of addiction and spiritual religious trauma. I want to welcome you on. It is so nice to finally be able to have you on my show. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me on. And yes, this conversation is a long time coming and I'm very excited. And it's an honor to be here and knowing the incredible work that you are doing in the community. And I'm excited to be having this conversation with you, one that I know is dear to both of us.
Yes, thank you. So we always get together. We go to Nefesh's conference. I see you in Florida. Yeah, you're busy with the rehab and all the young adults that are in the rehab. You deal with parents. Let's talk rehab placement. Before somebody wants their loved one to go to rehab, we need to have conversations, not only conversations with your young adult, teen, married child, loved one, spouse, but you really need to get an education. I always tell parents sort of like, be like what Cy Sims used to say, be an educated consumer. I want to ask you to explain to my listeners why being educated about the process is number one so important, please.
Absolutely. And I think that word education is so important because oftentimes if somebody is looking to place a loved one into a rehab, what that means by definition is that I'm against a crisis. It means that something is happening to my loved one and therefore I need to just act now. And even from a you know, a biochemical level, right? When someone is faced with something in front of them that is so scary and so, you know, crisis level, that part of the brain is hijacked. And so most of the parents that I'm speaking with are in this state of, I need to make a decision right now. And I'm scared and I don't know what to do. And there's this anxiety. However, the problem is that when it comes to finding the right type of program and even knowing if I need a program, right? Does my loved one actually need a rehab or can I do this in some other way? We need to be well informed about what to expect, right? What a rehab is even here to do. If I send my loved one in, what can I expect is going to look, what is it going to look like on the other side? What type of program, right? We know right now there are so many different programs that offer all sorts of different types of therapies and they're all specializing in different things. And some are in this part of the country and that part of the country. And there's so much confusion. And so when I speak to a family, what I hear is that confusion, that anxiety. And so being able to have these conversations to better understand what rehab is all about, what therapeutic interventions in general are offered in our community, how do I set my loved one up for success? This is the only way that I have ever seen these programs work effectively for the long run and avoid that kind of revolving door that so many people unfortunately fall prey to when they enter into rehab. It's this, you know, in and out. And to really see this work, we have to be educated. We have to know what these programs are, what they're not, what to expect, how to set myself up, my loved one, us as a family for success. And so education is key.
Thank you. And yes, I'm glad you brought up about it being so many rehabs. But most important, and it is a good thing that there are so many rehabs to make available for families in different states and cities, and there's Chabad around, so I know that the rabbis are available when and if anybody is ready and wants and requests it. I want to talk first about the parents, and there are a lot of misconceptions about rehab that you've been, you know, you're working up close and personal inside the rehabs. So let's talk about those first, please.
Absolutely. So I want to start off with the misconception that a rehab is a car wash, right? A rehab is this place that if my child is struggling with mental health, with addiction, you know, something is going on where they're not functioning, right? This new phenomenon, failure to launch, right? That if I send them, I get the money, I go ahead and I send them into this place, it's going to be this magical experience where they're going to go in and they're going to come out and they're going to be fixed. And therefore, if they come out and they're still struggling, that was a failure, either on the part of the program, the part of the child, the part of the family. So misconception number one is really that a rehab is there to solve the problem. And I think the first piece of education that I really want to emphasize is that when a child is struggling, and it could be a variety of different things that will land a person, you know, needing a therapeutic environment such as a rehab, the question is what is the function, right? What is, like, leaving my house, leaving my environment, going off into this bubble, this cocoon, you know, of a rehab, What is the purpose of it? And I can tell you that when a family is really set up to understand that a rehab is going to be almost like a first piece of a longer chess game, you know, I call it, meaning what we're doing when we're sending our loved one to rehab is we are interrupting whatever the cycle is going on right now, whether it's the cycle of substance use, the cycle of an undiagnosed, unmanaged mental health struggle, a chronic, you know, years and years of functioning from a place of trauma that hasn't been addressed. When I go into a rehab, what I'm doing essentially is I'm pausing. I'm pausing whatever has been going on in my life that is kind of continuing this cycle. And it's now a place where we can slow down and we can pause. And the biggest function of rehab, that higher level of care that often does not get enough emphasis, is that it's a place to really understand and gain clarity as to what the nature of the challenge is to begin with. Before we can step into trying to address it, solve it, fix it, first we need to understand it. And families are often so much in this desperation where I just want my child to be fixed and to get better. So I'm going to send them to this rehab and I want them just to take care of it. That is, I think, misconception number one. Rehabs do a very good job, if this is, again, the right program is chosen and this is set up, to helping a family get education as to the nature of the problem. Right? What is going on with my child? Why is my child struggling? Is there, again, what is the diagnosis or what is the combination of diagnoses? What are these patterns? And let's just slow things down. Let's give the family a time to breathe so that they can now know that their loved one is safe. And let's have a team of providers who can look at this person in kind of like a laboratory in a sterile environment where they're not going to be off, you know, still being able to have access to the drugs, or they're not going to be able to be in a state of risk because, you know, they're manic or in a psychosis state or a depression that's leading them to, you know, thoughts of self-harm, right? Let's get them in a safe place. Let's get them evaluated. Let's get clarity as to what's going on. Then let's set up a treatment plan, a roadmap that takes into account what we're learning about this person so we can set them up for success. But rehab is almost like that control center. It's like that place where we can put them, you know, in a cocooned environment, get to know them on a very deep level, and let's not even necessarily start the intervention, because how can we know which modality of therapy or which medication or which series of resources are needed if I don't first have clarity? So rehab to me is a place where we get clarity, we create a roadmap, and then from there, that's when we start the process of change. It's oftentimes after the rehab that we do that.
I'm glad you brought that up, because at MASC, you know, we're in our 27th year. We've had over 120,000 families attend programs of MASC. And one thing that I've heard over the years so many times is parents calling up after they sent their loved one to a rehab that they picked, because their next door neighbor or their relative's kid went there, and then it being not the place, the proper placement for their child. So they'll call and ask me to help clean it up, the mess. And not always do you get another chance to put somebody into a second rehab if needed. So we recommend at MASC that people get evaluated by an addiction therapist prior to being placed in an inpatient facility. So that, two reasons. Number one, that family members should know what they're dealing with properly and what kind of placement to look for. And number two, that the client themselves has where to be discharged to after they're in rehab. And one more point I'd like to bring out, and that is that we always say to parents, the first 30 days, they're usually just getting used to being in their own skin, and they're fighting being there, and they're detoxing, and it's a difficult time for them. The second 30 days, they're now starting to hear what they're being taught, and they're offered tools on how to deal with being off drugs suddenly, etc. And then the third month is really when they learn and put in use the tools that they've learned, where they can get ready to be discharged after 90 days. So that's ideally a minimum of 90 days in a rehab minimum. So let's go to what your feelings are that families should consider when they're looking for a program. And please don't say, go to where your neighbor's kid went, because they did well there.
Absolutely. And I think that point you bring up, that people will kind of hear these buzzwords, whether it's because they know there's a fad out there called EMDR, IFS, somatic, right? We kind of get, we hear these therapies that we believe are going to be like that magical elixir. And then we say, okay, let me find a program that specializes in that, because this, yeah, that's what helped my neighbor's kid. And I think what you're bringing up is really, really, really crucial. Each person is, even if we have 30 people all in rehab, each one is an individual story, and each one has, you know, this personalized roadmap that they're going to need for long-term healing. And a rehab could be a very powerful resource and tool to help kind of organize and get that person started, like you said, to build that motivation, to build trust, to come away from whatever substance or behavioral pattern was interrupting, you know, their ability to think clearly. And that's why they need that intervention. The beginning of the rehab process is often the time that they're experiencing, you know, the height of the problem. And so we often think that we need a rehab that's going to be the highest quality, you know, in certain clinical modalities, or maybe we want a rehab that's offering, you know, the cutting edge, you know, therapeutic, you know, the therapeutic, you know, interventions. But that first step, as you said, when a person first gets into rehab, all they're doing is getting grounded. They're building trust. Oftentimes they're kicking and screaming and fighting with the staff and saying that they're going to leave. And it's just a matter of getting that first, as we call it, the stages of change, that pre-contemplation, where they don't necessarily know that they need help. And so in the beginning, we're either detoxing them from a substance, or we're just getting their bodies and their nervous systems grounded. Once they've accepted that, for whatever reason that they often don't agree with, they have to be in a program, building trust with the staff around them is so important. And that first 30 days, you know, that's a great number, is often just them kind of buying into the fact that, yes, they do want help. They want support. People are on their team. Their family is in their corner, even though they didn't realize it or see it at the time. The staff that's giving them suggestions is not there to fight them. But it's also, back to my original point, that the evaluation piece is important. Those first 30 days of watching the person's patterns, their attachment patterns and styles, their defense mechanisms, all those things gives the practitioner a really good window into what's been happening on the outside. So when they come into a program and there are certain things that they're doing or saying, or certain strategies they're using oftentimes to get out of the program, that actually is an opportunity for a therapist to learn a lot about that person, their story, their trauma story, how they've been kind of managing themselves on the outside, why they had to turn to a substance. So that first 30 days of resistance is where we need less amount of cutting edge therapies, more programs that set the stage for to know how to handle someone who's in that first pre-contemplation stage, right? They're often fighting with themselves and they fight with staff. So a team that is compassionate, sophisticated to do that kind of clinical evaluation and to understand what's going on, and who knows how to recommend the next steps. I know that at MASC, something that I've always been very impressed by is that focus, that aftercare is almost in some ways equally, if not more important than whatever that first stage of treatment is. And often when we raise money in our communities, you know, we look to help people get into programs. Sometimes we allocate funds to the higher, to the first stage, because we think that, again, back to that car wash model, that we need a person to get the solution, the first step. The step after rehab is where the magic happens. And so if we get them grounded, detoxed, motivated, they're now in a place where they're open to help, open to support, then we move them down the kind of that conveyor belt to the next step, where then those therapeutic modalities have to be very strategically chosen. And that's where that aftercare becomes even, you know, more critical from a therapeutic, you know, standpoint. And we have to wait till they're stabilized and ready to receive that. And that's the function of the rehab, is to get them open and receptive to being able to have the therapies really take root. You know, kind of take off that onion, go from layer to layer. Once we get to the core, then we're doing the in-depth trauma work or the addiction work that can last. But the rehab is there to help everyone, including the family members, just get organized, get grounded, you know, be able to breathe, be able to have that frontal cortex thinking come back. And then we have to kind of move on to the next steps.
So you have a good memory from our first meeting when we sat down in Florida and we spoke. And I told you about step down being the number one importance, because when they do get discharged from any inpatient program, then they're out of their bubble. And back out in the world is frightening when you've been on drugs for a while and now you're drug free and going back to your same home, environment, family, friends, dormitory, wherever you are. So it's always good to have a good step down in place, intensive outpatient program, and gradually move to your regular therapy, but always be in a 12-step program. Deborah, I do want to bring up an important piece that parents find out only after they go in, their loved ones are admitted, and their kids start to call home and say, I only see the therapist twice a week, or I only see a psychiatrist every couple weeks. Let's talk about the different types of programs that there are. Some are trauma programs, others call themselves addiction programs. It's all how they're licensed and what their focus is. So let's have a little education for my listeners, please.
Absolutely. And I think right now that this, we're getting more and more familiar with this concept of rehab, there is an assumption I hear that they're all kind of the same, the same programs. And then when families start to hear these different words, they get so thrown off, right? They hear that one program is a trauma program, one program is an addiction program. So I think that it's really, really important to understand the following. When we are looking to place, our child, and I'm going to say the same thing again, if we don't first have an understanding of what that person is needing to be able to move from that phase of stabilization to that phase where therapy could actually now go and take root on a deeper level, we risk that period being completely misused. And so for some people, in order to get help, in order to enter into recovery, they're going to need to do trauma work. But if they're not yet stabilized, it's not going to work. And so we have to understand that there exist out there programs that specialize in different things, because they're focusing often on not only people with different types of problems to begin with, but also sometimes people who are at very different phases of recovery. And so even if somebody is struggling because they have a combination, a tornado, more like it, of things like an addiction, of a undiagnosed mental health struggle, such as bipolar, OCD, things of that nature. Now we're seeing a lot of cannabis-induced psychosis. So sometimes people have a combination of different issues. And so we think, let me find a place that just has the best, reputation. But we have to understand, what am I sending my child in for? So if there is a chemical dependency, and I'm going to need to first get that person detoxed and inside of a recovery program before I could do other types of trauma work, then we're going to be looking for an addiction program. If the person has done that initial stabilization, they're detoxed or they never were struggling with drugs to begin with, and what's interrupting their functioning is really that inability to develop healthy relationships with themselves and other people, and perhaps they are struggling with a personality disorder or something like that that's just hurting their relationships, creating a lot of turmoil. So then we need them to be able to do trauma work in a very intensive setting. So if somebody has been doing, one or twice a week outpatient trauma work, and they're finding it's not enough, their system is still dysregulated, they're still constantly, that inner child has not yet been healed. So there is a huge benefit, just like with a substance, we need to go into a program to not have access to the substance. So the same idea is that in a trauma program, I'm in a safe environment, I'm able to avoid triggers in my life, and I can now sit and focus on trauma work. So to have someone on the outside really capable of understanding, what does this person need now? Why does this person need to go into a kind of cocoon bubble environment? Is it to get away from drugs and alcohol and substances so that the brain is no longer hijacked? So then we need to start off with an addiction program. And even if they do require trauma work, or let's call it, skills-based work like DBT, for mental health regulation, but they're not necessarily ready for that until we get them off the substances. So then we need to place them in an addiction program. If the person really needs to have a good psychiatrist and give them a diagnosis from that biochemical level, we need to get them on the right medications. And until they do other types of work, we need to get them you know, their mental health stabilized, then we're looking at a program that does a really good job of psychiatric evaluation and medication management and skills-based therapy. If the person, the issue in their life is, again, their relationships and their and the complex trauma is now taking over, and they can't just do trauma work without getting dysregulated at an outpatient level, so then doing that in a very monitored, wraparound, safe environment is going to be the benefit. And so all this to say, before we can kind of choose a program, we shouldn't be going off of buzzwords that we hear, like trauma, like EMDR, like somatic work, like inner child. You know, we need to do is understand what is the nature of my current struggle. Even if I'm struggling with a host of things, why am I going into this program? Why am I sending a loved one into this program? Is it to get on the right medications? Is it to get away from substances? Is it to do deeper trauma work that I can't do at an outpatient level, you know, and still go to work the next day while I'm dysregulated? Like, what is the reason? And so what I really want to educate the listeners on today is that, yes, all these programs could be called rehab. And all these programs, you know, could have a similar similar process, similar schedules, similar staffs. But at the end of the day, the question is, what am I trying to accomplish by going to rehab now? What can I now save for aftercare?
Wow, thank you. This is such important information that everybody really needs to realize, that being an educated consumer is really the most important thing. First, get the information you need before you speak to your loved one about possibly being admitted. Well, we're running out of time, and I hope to have you on again very soon. I waited a long time to get you on now. Hope to see you next week at NEPESH conference. Anybody that wants to go to the conference, please, it is in New Jersey this year, so come join us. Therapists, clinics, any employees, please give us a call and we will tell you all about the upcoming conference. Well, Deborah, it's great having you on. Thank you. And I hope to have you on again soon to continue this important conversation.
Thank you, Rahama, and thank you for all the incredible work that you're doing at MASC. I know firsthand how many families are being given the support and direction that they need from the work that you're doing.
Thank you, with my wonderful staff, never alone. Thank you. And thank I you. Want to wish everyone a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos. And always remember, hang in, hold on, hug tight. Tonight's show is in honor of all the Chayalim. Bring the hostages home now. Please consider to go online. It's the end of the year. Make your donations to MASC, Mothers and Fathers Aligned, Saving Kids. Be our partner. Donate online at maskparents.org so we can continue with all the MASC programs. Thank you and have a good night.
Did you know my mom's gonna have a baby?
She is?
Will it be a boy?
Or will it be a girl?
We don't know yet, but we heard the heartbeat and my dad said this is gonna be someone very special.
You mean like being a president? Or maybe a doctor?
Well, probably maybe like a singer or dancer, I think.
Hello, my name is Marianne Koharski. I'm the director of Pro-Life Across America. We know every baby is a miracle and has the potential to do great things. This season, we hope you will consider supporting the work of Pro-Life Across America. We're non-political and totally educational. Your gift will help offer life-saving alternatives and pregnancy assistance to those in need. Visit our website at prolifeacrossamerica.org or like us on Facebook.
A baby's heart is beating 18 days from conception.
Are you seeking legal expertise backed by decades of experience? Look no further than Guerriera, Feldman & Williams. For over 20 years, our dedicated team has navigated the complexities of real estate, estate planning, including wills, trusts, and estates, surrogate court matters, and landlord-tenant law. But what truly sets us apart? Our attorneys don't just represent clients. They invest their hearts in every case. Passionate, committed, and relentless. That's the Guerriera, Feldman & Williams way. Call us at 212-533-6800 for a consultation. That's 212-533-6800. Guerriera, Feldman & Williams, the Compassionate Lawyers.